The last chapter of Driving Eureka is an interview with Kevin Cahill, President and Executive Director of the Deming Institute and also grandson of Dr. W. Edwards Deming. It's a Q&A. I began by asking, what is the Deming Institute's primary mission? Kevin. The Institute's primary mission is to carry on my grandfather's work and teachings, to inspire people to learn, and as he always said, to seek new knowledge and transform their businesses, schools, and communities so they're better prepared for the future and not the past. I asked, what are the methods you use to accomplish that? Kevin. We start by promoting a greater understanding and an awareness and application of Deming's System of Profound Knowledge. System of Profound Knowledge is the transformative philosophy that he developed at the end of his life. We do this through an ever-expanding series of learning programs, initiatives, events, outreach programs, and partnerships with different like-minded organizations. To learn more, you can visit deming.org. Doug, what is the history of the Deming Institute's creation? Kevin, he, that is my grandfather, decided when he was in his 90s, at the end of his life, that he really didn't want to focus on building a consulting practice to carry on his work. What he decided to do was to create a nonprofit organization whose primary mission we just discussed. He decided to create the organization as a nonprofit, with the belief that doing it that way would open up interesting doors and unique opportunities that might not necessarily happen for a for-profit consulting business. He started it right before he passed away. It was literally months before he passed away. And then it was up to those who were initially on the board to create the initial aim of the organization and method by which to carry out that aim. Doug, what would you say is Dr. Deming's most important contribution to the business community? Kevin, there are two parts to my answer, and I think one naturally leads to the other. The first contribution was viewing an organization as a system. From what I've read and seen and looking through his journals and everything, it began when he went into Japan in the 1950s. At the start of every single lecture or seminar that he did, he drew the organization as a system. Then he went on to define that your organization isn't an organizational chart. Your organization is a system. He defined that system as a network of interdependent components that work together to accomplish the aim of that system. He was saying that the aim of any of those systems should be that everybody gains, not just one part of the system at the expense of the other. And I think that that contribution became part of the second part of my answer, which would be the larger contribution, which I think was truly the culmination of his life's work. And that's what I mentioned before, which is the Deming System of Profound Knowledge. I think that in terms of being an important contribution, it's an incredibly effective theory of management that provides that framework of thought and action for any leader wishing to transform and create any kind of a thriving organization and using that to improve the quality of people's lives. Doug, I agree on both points, and I have to thank you for pointing me to the System of Profound Knowledge, and you're being relentless in emphasizing its importance. I had missed it, as my dad didn't teach it to me. Recall, my dad worked with your grandfather in 1979 at Nash Corporation when it was not yet formed in Dr. Deming's mind. The four principles were there, but not organized as elegantly as they would be in later years. In working with it, we have found that if you change the order a little, it becomes an amazingly powerful and very simple step-by-step method for improving systems. Recall, we swapped the order of psychology and theory of knowledge. It then reads, step one, appreciation for a system. Make the system visible, the aim, the stakeholders, the flowchart, etc. Step two, knowledge about variation. Identify areas of high common cause variation and special cause variation. Step three, psychology. Identify areas of negative and positive psychology. And then step four, theory of knowledge, PDSA. Run experiments to improve the system. Kevin, exactly. And that PDSA is your theory to improve it. Doug, by flipping numbers 3 and 4, it became easier to understand as a whole. We've seen very positive reaction from executives. It has an elegance to it, and it's so easy to get started with it, you can review it on a piece of paper in just minutes. Kevin, what's interesting, Doug, and I'd be interested in your opinion, I don't think that flipping the order makes that much difference. I think it's whatever works best, don't you? Doug, I don't think it would matter to him, that is Dr. Deming, but in our application today, it's easier to implement. Executives see it as step one, step two, step three, step four. You make the system visible, identify areas of high variance and negative psychology, then you run PDSA experiments to find ways to improve the system. When we articulate it as four steps, it's easier for people to get started with applying the principles. That doesn't mean they don't think about other interactions of the four principles, it's just a start. This packaging makes it easier to apply. We are intent on finding ways to make it easy to apply, which, as you know, Dr. Deming, the professor, refused to tell you how to do anything. He taught the philosophy. Kevin, he never answered my questions. He'd always tell me where to go to look for the answer. Doug, in the New Economics, Dr. Deming wrote that production was 3% of the opportunity for company improvement. In a chart on page 37, he referred to the 97% as strategy and long-term planning and all of the company-wide systems, which I then write in simple terms as strategy, innovation, and how we work together. As a business person, and I fully respect the fact that you can't read Dr. Deming's mind, but thinking about strategy, innovation, and how we work together, what do you feel is the greatest challenge with companies today? Kevin, well, I think one of the biggest challenges is that they do not look at their organization as a system. Until they do that, they're trying, I think a lot of times, to make improvements when they don't really know what they need to improve. I thought it was fascinating when I was in Singapore and a company had us come in and talk to them. And they were kind of swimming in ideas. They didn't know what to do with them. And we asked what was going on. They said they decided they needed to innovate because they realized that unless they innovated, that they could go out of business. So they just started telling people to come up with ideas. Everyone was required to put at least one idea a week in the suggestion box. They had 300 people in the factory, so soon they had 1,500 ideas, and they had no idea what to do with them. They realized they hadn't even articulated to the people why they wanted to innovate. They hadn't articulated what they were trying to ultimately accomplish. Doug, so what you're saying is that you can't separate strategy, innovation, and how we work together because they are a collective system. Kevin, exactly. Doug, one of the challenges with applying system thinking is the difference between a factory, which is primarily a collection of mechanical systems, and innovation and strategy, which are composed primarily of human systems. Kevin, I think that's a really interesting observation. In the end, it doesn't really matter whether it's a mechanical or human system. One of the things my grandfather talked about was AIM and the importance of everyone understanding the aim of the system. Every system, mechanical, human, or combination, has to have an aim to it. And that aim needs to be clearly defined so that everyone understands whether it's strategy, innovation, or how we work together. Comment by Doug. Without that alignment on aim, there is chaos. Kevin. Without alignment, you can't have the constancy of purpose that my grandfather talked about. As an aside, at our Innovation Engineering Conference, Kevin came and spoke. He was the first outside speaker to talk to the innovation engineering community at our annual conference. He spoke for 45 minutes on one thing, which was aim. Just on aim, the importance of having alignment on the aim of the system. Now back to the book. Doug, when we mention Deming to executives, they often say, we already did Deming. However, when you say, yes, you did mechanical systems in your factory, but we're here to talk about the new economy, it's the human systems that are the challenges. Kevin, that's interesting because, you know, that's also one of our challenges. It's hard to get people to stop and think that Deming is not just about the factory, you know. It's not just about the shop floor. It's not just about, like you said, the mechanical things. I think that was part of what he came to realize at the end of his life. I think he probably became a little bit frustrated that a lot of people really looked at system thinking as just for factories. In truth, it can and should apply to everyone in every organization, as you found out. Doug, to add to that, as I mentioned, in Dr. Deming's last book, he wrote that application of system thinking in the factory was only 3% of what was to be done. That number is important, as he was a statistician who understood order of magnitude. He could have said 30%, but he didn't. He said 3%. He declared that his life's work, at least from when he started in Japan, was only 3% of the opportunity. This is an example of his frustration at people not getting the fact that he wasn't talking about factories. He was talking about leadership and how you ran the company. Kevin, yes, we talk about it when we do our seminars, that organizations realize impacts from Six Sigma, Lean, or other tool-focused applications, but they tend to eventually hit a ceiling on innovation and improvement. Until you actually start to think about the other elements that you're teaching people, those company-wide systems, the interactions, like you said in that diagram, the personnel, the training, detrimental systems of reward, you are not going to realize the full potential of systems thinking. Doug, when I interviewed Bill Conway, who was the CEO of Nasher Corporation, the first leader in the U.S. to embrace Dr. Deming, I asked what's the most important thing that Dr. Deming taught him. He said constancy of purpose, constancy of purpose, constancy of purpose. Kevin, yes. Doug, then of course I went back to Dr. Deming's book and read the section on constancy of purpose. That is the long-term survival of the organization. And the first thing he says on how to do this is to innovate. Kevin, yes. Doug, it really hit me how strongly he supported innovation. It's the first thing he tells people to do. And his primary focus is on leading customers, not just cost-cutting and optimizing the existing offering. Despite that, he's not known as being an innovation expert. Kevin, no, it's interesting that he's not. He spends time talking about how important innovation really is. He gives that famous example that you can optimize the carburetor all you want, but fuel injection came along and replaced the carburetor. He was clear that if you're not going to innovate, you will ultimately go out of business. Doug, I recall a quote from him. It is not necessary to change. Survival is not mandatory. Kevin, yes. Deming is all about the proper aim. If your aim is to build the best, lowest cost, highest quality carburetor, and you're working your tail off to hit that aim, you're improving quality and productivity on that aim, but that doesn't mean you're going to stay in business. I mean, you've got to have an aim and that constancy of purpose that gives you the guiding principles that say, wait a second, I need to look outside. I think you call it leap innovation. I don't remember the exact words, but he suggested that ultimately the aim should have been for the carburetor company to put a mixture of air and fuel in the combustion chamber and ultimately innovate something new and more effective. Doug, Dr. Deming's higher order aim always was the long-term success, survival, and growth of the organization. The long-term was always key. To him, the only measure of a CEO is, did they do things to maintain the long-term success? I love to add to it, no whining. My guess is that Dr. Deming was pretty much a no whining guy too. What do you think is the greatest barrier to leadership embracing the system thinking mindset? Kevin, I would say, and this is my personal belief, that most of the people who are in leadership roles have been trained and taught for decades in an existing system of management. They were never taught system thinking. They've been taught in school and at work a style of management where you're graded, you're rated, you're ranked. You improve performance by focusing on people, not the system. Now all of a sudden, they're walking into an innovation engineering class or a Deming seminar, and we're asking them to do a 180 in their thinking. From talking with David Langford, who leads our education initiative, one of the hardest things is to all of a sudden say, I'm going to change my brain. I mean, you literally have to change the way your brain works, and it's not easy to do that. Doug, they're used to just blaming people instead of taking responsibility for the system. Kevin, exactly. And the biggest thing that I see when talking to leaders in terms of getting them to embrace a system thinking mindset is their existing belief that the problem isn't the system, it's the people. They believe that if they can cut off the bottom performers and just have top performers, then they're going to be better off. So what they end up doing is working on the people where maybe 6% of the problems are. Eventually, they have to come to realize that it's the system that's the greater issue. Doug, when working with an executive who's been in the job for a few years, you can sometimes create a eureka moment for them by pointing out that they've changed their VP of sales 3 times in 5 years. And each time the person hired failed to hit their numbers. It appears that either they have a bad system for hiring, or maybe the problem is the system, not the people we put in the job. Sometimes executives don't often realize that if a worker is provided no system, training, or tools to do their job, which is usually the case when it comes to innovation, then it's not their fault when they don't achieve the aim of the system. Lack of training is a common cause error of the system and a classic source of high variance. Workers aren't supposed to just magically know how to innovate. The need for training, training, training is throughout Dr. Deming's writings and the Deming video library. If you haven't provided employees training in what to do, why to do it, and how to do it, you can't complain or blame them when things go wrong. Kevin, exactly. Organizations will show us their control charts, and they'll say they're mapping everything out. We then ask them, what do you do with them? They say, well, if there's a point here in this chart we don't like, we take a look at it. We then point out that you're looking at a point that's within the control limits, a common cause. This tells us they don't really understand Dr. Deming's teaching on variation. If the system is stable, and you don't like the variance you're realizing in sales or in the volume of products that you're producing, then you need to work on improving the system. And that will require training, like you said, Doug, in methods for reducing that variation. Doug, I was interested in reading that when Dr. Deming was asked how he would summarize his overall message in a few words, he said, I'm not sure, but it would have something to do with variation. Later, he said, I said earlier that my message had to do with variation. I've given it some more thought, and I would say it has to do with pride of work. Now, sadly, our research of over 12,000 employees found just 5% feel high pride of work. In your opinion, Kevin, what stands in the way of pride of work today? Kevin, when I read your research, it depressed me. It's what my grandfather wrote about more than 25 years ago. It's terribly demoralizing that things have not improved. All of the same mistakes still exist, such as not understanding the system. And point 12 of my grandfather's 14 points, where he said, remove the barriers that rob employees and those in management of their right to pride of workmanship. This means abolishing the annual rating, MBO, or Management by Objective, MBR, and all those MBs. As we talked about earlier, we need to enable the workers, enable the people in the organization. We need to give them a chance to advance their learning and actually contribute their talents. Everybody has some level of talent, and we never talk to any workers that go to work unless they're so beaten down that they don't want to contribute. Employees want to have their talents have impact in a positive way on the business. Doug, the internet has accelerated the rate of change that business leaders face. How do you feel the application of system thinking can help with this? Kevin, the internet has accelerated the rate of change. And unless you're thinking from a system standpoint, more than ever, you just can't waste time. Because as I think it was Robert Rodin that said, right now, there is somebody looking at you who is right around the corner or around the world who wants to do what you do better, faster, and cheaper. To be able to compete, you've got to break down the barriers so that you can be innovative. You've got to drive out the fear that may preclude people from being innovative or being interested in it. Systems thinking is what's going to enable you to innovate. Because if all you're going to do is manage by objective or manage by results, then all you're going to do is just run harder doing the exact same thing you're doing right now. And I think ultimately you'll be out of business. Doug. Bill Conway told me that Dr. Deming had told him it was important to work with the willing. What advice would you give to an employee who is working for a leader who is unwilling, shall we say, to learn or change? Kevin, I agree. You got to work with the willing. whether it's at the bottom, at the middle, or at the top. I know my grandfather said quality starts in the boardroom. And I've heard many people say, unless you're at the top, it's not worth doing. I disagree. Because you're not always going to get the person at the top right off the bat. I believe that every single person in every single organization has some sphere of influence they can impact. Ultimately, that's what I did. When I started out working just out of college, I had leaders who were fantastic people, but they really didn't want to change because what they were doing at that time was working well. I started out as an assistant to an assistant, but I realized that I could use my grandfather's ideas and thinking to improve the areas that I had some influence over. In time, it had a real impact, and people started noticing that this guy did something really interesting and different. What it enabled me to do is to move up the organization. Eventually, those who were willing to learn the new way of thinking and applying it could end up being in charge of that leader who was unwilling to learn or to change. Doug, I agree 100%. We can't wait. We need to find the willing, get started, and let it grow from there. Based on what you've learned and read about innovation engineering, do you think a company on their Deming journey would find it a natural extension of his work? Kevin, I believe in any process and approach that starts with, and I'll actually quote you from the book, innovation requires a learning mindset. You can't create a new idea without learning. It's a never-ending journey. You combine that with a focus on education of leadership, which you do, and understanding of the system-driven innovation principles, which we call the system of profound knowledge, getting leaders to drive out fear, and then many others you combine, all combined lead to a constancy of purpose which brings about innovation. My grandfather said it's critical to innovate. Having satisfied loyal customers is great, but it's not enough. The moral is that it is critical to innovate, to predict the needs of the customer. And by customers, you know, Doug, he meant internal and external. But having a goal to innovate is also not enough. Because everyone may want to hit that goal, and most everyone does, but the key is by what method do we do it? I believe if you learn the Deming philosophy and incorporate proven innovation systems, then you can truly be innovative. I love what you wrote. A system mindset, explore stimulus, leverage diversity, and drive out fear principles are simple and unquestionable in their impact. Their application is anything but. To develop them as a new mindset across the culture takes time, education, and repetition. Doug, it's funny as you read that to me. I can just hear your grandfather saying similar things. Kevin, yes. Doug, it's a basic message, isn't it? Kevin, yes. You got to have that system mindset. Doug, Dr. Deming said, in my experience, most troubles are 94% a result of the system, 6% special causes. In my dad's speech in 1980, after working with your grandfather, my dad declared 94% of the problems were due to the system, 6% the workers, and only management can change the system. What do you think about this concept, 94% system, 6% workers? Kevin, in my experience, it's about right. From what I've seen and what I've heard talking to a lot of different people, I've heard people say my grandfather thought it to be about 96 or 98%. Some of the people will say, okay, 6% is a worker. But if it's special causes, those special causes are actually unwanted variation, which may or may not be due to the worker. It's worth looking into special causes, because while it's part of the system, it needs to be identified and determined if it's a false signal or if it can reoccur. I think the important thing for leaders to understand is if special causes can reoccur, you've got to identify them and eliminate them. Because until the special causes are eliminated, the system is unstable. And thus the leader is working on trying to improve an unstable system. And if you're trying to improve an unstable system, you're trying to improve a performance that's unstable, which means it can't be predicted. You really need that process to be in control in order to improve it. So you've got to get rid of whatever those special causes are. Doug, let's look again at human versus mechanical systems. If I'm a mechanical system, there are things that could happen, such as an electrical surge, but in a human system, then it becomes much more about management and employees, human systems of how we work together. Kevin, yes, you bring up an interesting point, because if you're trying to figure out what's a special cause and what's a common cause in a human system, that's got to be really hard to make that conclusion. Doug, that's been one of the greatest challenges in applying Deming outside of the factory. That's why we need to bring data and data systems to these human systems. What I'm finding is that with innovation, it's at least 94%, especially when I say that 94% includes having a method, training, and tools to innovate. Sadly, there are none of these for most employees. The only innovation system that exists is a system of controls on what not to do. Nothing on what to do. Kevin, so they don't know how to innovate. Doug, no, they don't. Innovation is a random special cause event in most companies. The innovation problem is 99.9% common cause error. The truth is, usually there is no system, no method, no instruction, no standardized work, no way to create ideas. The problem is 99.9% system because there is no system. And for the change of mindset to happen across the organization requires leadership of a team, department, division, or organization to lead the new way of thinking. Kevin, well, you hit it right on the head. It's rare that leadership steps back from reacting to the marketplace and their numbers. I mean, that's what they're trained to do. And until we get them away from thinking about that, and until they gain the insight necessary to view their organization through a new system lens, they're not going to change. Getting leaders to provide strategic leadership in a form that engages employees really boils it down to getting them to say, I've got to manage differently. I got to lead differently. And the reason I do is because I was looking at things through a lens that didn't give me the insight that I needed to do these different things. Doug, Dr. Deming felt that much of what is important was unknown and unknowable. With innovation engineering, we have worked to make some of this known and visible. How important is it to make the innovation system visible and known? Kevin, the loss from inhibitors to pride and workmanship is unknown and immeasurable. But with that all being said, obviously the more you can measure and the more that you can have known, once you're measuring it, you can understand how stable it is, then you can understand how to improve it. Doug, variation was a key element of Dr. Deming's teachings. How important is understanding variation today? What holds leadership back from understanding variation in their management and decision-making? Kevin, I don't think they truly understand variation and the critical nature of what is a common and what is a special cause. I think it's incredibly important because once you understand variation, you can see your organization as a system. And once the system is stable, it's predictable. You now know what it's going to produce within a certain range. It doesn't mean you like the input, but now you know what to work on. You are no longer going around playing whack-a-mole with special cause and with common cause elements. Doug, I think one of the challenges with getting managers to look at common cause versus special cause is that they're scared of doing the math. While we talk a lot about metrics, we use them to control, not to enable people to work smarter. There's some real value to doing the math. Kevin, absolutely. I agree. And with control chart tools today, like the one you've developed, based on my grandfather's formulas, it can be much easier than ever before. Doug, employees and managers have to get comfortable doing the math on variation. To enable this, we've created a super simple control charting application. It removes all excuses, but we're still finding that getting them to do the math is a challenge. Kevin, I agree with you 1,000% that if you can get them to plug in their data and take a look at it, then all of a sudden they go, whoa, I had no idea. It's the system I need to work on, not the people. Doug, enabling everyone, everywhere, every day is fundamental to innovation engineering. How important was enabling all members of an organization to understand system thinking to Dr. Deming? Kevin, absolutely critical. That's almost a one-word answer for me. It's critical. Until they view their organization as a system, they're not going to see sustained improvement. Otherwise, they're just going off, as my grandfather put it, into the Milky Way. Doug, what do you mean by going into the Milky Way? Kevin, if everybody in the organization understands system thinking, then they understand the aim of the system and how their work fits in. When they don't have a common mindset, they're going off wandering around the Milky Way. Everybody is doing their best, as my grandfather would say, giving their best efforts and working hard, all towards a different aim. Here's a quick example from when I started my business. I sat everyone down at a table. I think we had 12 employees. We had each person write down on a piece of paper what the aim of the system was. I did this because I was struggling with everybody working really hard, but we were not making the progress we needed to make. We were a startup company, and everybody was working 24/7. Out of the 12 people, how many of them do you think wrote down the same aim? None of them. None of them. That was my problem. So I made the system visible and outlined the aim of the company. The improvements in our individual effectiveness and in the company's results were as my grandfather would predict. Doug, what excites you about innovation engineering in the 21st century? Kevin, what excites me is that I think, without a doubt, innovation is the key. None of these companies, no organization or government can survive without innovation. Innovation is really the key. Of course, one requirement for innovation is faith that there's going to be a future. Don't you agree? Doug, yes, absolutely. Kevin, innovation is the foundation of the future. We can't thrive unless top management have that unshakable commitment to innovation, quality, and productivity. Doug, so now I'm going to ask for your personal help. If you could wave a magic wand, where would you focus the innovation engineering movement? Kevin, I think the innovation engineering movement needs to focus on large organizations. You're having an impact on big companies in a way the Deming Institute can't have today. The way you're explaining systems thinking and the way you're doing it is getting them to think about it in a way that we're not able to. We tend to have very good success with small and medium-sized companies, but when it comes to bigger companies, we're not, and you are. So in my mind, I think that innovation engineering needs to focus on the larger companies. I mean, they employ the greatest number of people, and they have an enormous impact on our society. I know that everyone talks about small business being the engine that drives the country. But when you've got 150,000 at whatever it is, a Toyota or a Ford Motor Company, and you can have that major impact there, it matters. My grandfather always tried to do that too. He went with the bigger companies for the most part because he saw that he could have the greatest impact. To me, that's where I think your focus is very well served. It doesn't mean it wouldn't be well served elsewhere, but I mean, I think that's one of the hardest nuts to crack. And God bless you for taking on a nut like that. Doug, I don't like your answer, but I know you're right. It's a ton more fun to work with small and medium-sized companies. However, if we're going to change the world, we're going to need to reignite system thinking in the large organizations, be they businesses, universities, or governments. It really is hard to change large organizations. That said, to keep us sane, we also support tens of thousands of small businesses and entrepreneurs through our scholarship programs and the Innovation Engineering Foundation. Kevin, but if you're going to change the culture of business in America or in the world, you got to change the big guys. When I look at some statistics for large companies going back 40 or 50 years, you see they hit a point and they don't keep getting bigger. They start declining. I think a main part of the reason they start getting smaller is because they're not innovative anymore. Doug, What advice would you give to students studying innovation engineering on campus who are preparing to enter industry? Kevin. When asked that by students, I typically tell them that learning systems thinking at a young age is a tremendous advantage for you as an individual. It gives you a valuable mindset at the start of your career. Most of the time, people learn system thinking much later in life. This makes it hard for them to accept the change because they've been practicing the prevailing style of management so long, and now they're trying to reverse it or change it. I think it's amazingly cool to have people coming out of school who are thinking this way. It's so much easier than trying to get them to change once they realize that they've hit a wall or they're frustrated. We're finding that this message really resonates with them because they're not big believers in the typical command and control mindset that exists in most big organizations. Doug, what advice would you offer to the leadership of companies considering system-driven innovation as we do it with innovation engineering? Kevin, the advice I would say is system-driven innovation, like the system of profound knowledge that my grandfather taught, is a new mindset that you have to commit to. There's always going to be pieces that aren't going to make sense at first, that are going to be challenging at first for you. As you gain new knowledge and insight and understanding, it's going to make more sense, and it's going to be easier. It's not one of those things where you do it once or twice and it's over and you're done with it. Your market's going to change, your business is going to change. It gives you such an amazing advantage because it teaches you how to look at and deal with those changes by thinking differently. Doug, anything else that I didn't ask you that we should talk about? You've been very, very kind. I've learned a lot through this interview. In my view, it's always a good day when you learn something. Kevin, well, that goes both ways, Doug, because frankly, I always learn as well from your questions. They get me thinking in new ways. They cause me to think about my grandfather's work from a different angle or approach. So I've got to tell you, I appreciate the opportunity to do this. Final reflection. The words on these pages are not the answer. Rather, they are the start of a conversation that needs to begin around the world on how to enable everyone to dream, create, and think. Everybody's got wings, as the song lyrics state. This book is imperfect, but it's a start. As Dr. Deming would say at the conclusion of his seminars, I have done my best. And with that, I close the file on this book and send it off to my publisher. Tomorrow, work begins on the next edition. There are more cycles of learning to complete.